Hey, fellow travelers. Welcome back as we continue our co-joined initiation into the conscious universe with psychonaut, professor, and author Chris Bausch talking about his experiences, which are chronicled in his book, LSD and the Mind of the Universe. I'm Robin with Tributaries.
There is a price to be paid to become one with deeper and deeper orders of existence. That's all. It's a purification process. It's just a purification process.
Yes. Now, you mentioned the causal mind.
Mm-hmm.
Would you talk about that just for a moment?
It's a category which spiritual writers will use. The progression, as I experience it, when I let go of my time-space identity, and I'll generalize because I think this is a widely shared experience, one enters into spiritual reality or transpersonal reality, and one experiences some dimension of the spiritual universe, but it tends to be colored by the reality that one is leaving of time-space reality. And that's one purifies one's experience and goes deeper and deeper, one enters into larger and larger structures. So instead of experiencing just your personal unconscious, you enter into the collective unconscious, into the species mind. And then you can go deeper into some of the archetypal dynamics of the deep structure of consciousness. But eventually one comes to a point where all those dualities, all those divisions become dissolved, and one is taken into a state of awareness in which the entire universe moves and pulses as a single living being. This has been known for ages. I mean, Plotinus says everything breathes as one. And that's the experience at the causal level, that there is diversity, there are differences, there are colors and textures and movement, but the entire totality is a single consciousness which is pulsing and breathing and living through this tremendous diversity of life. That's what I mean by the causal mind, the causal oneness.
Would you share a bit about ego state psychology, seeing ego states as created in reaction to trauma, and the shamanic persona being born from a surplus of blessings? You write about this in your book, and I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about this. Do they intersect?
Well, first, let me just caution and say I'm not a psychologist, and so anything I say is purely as a layman, but my understanding of ego state psychology is a school within psychology that really has focused on the fact that our mind is not one, but actually there are many voices in our mind, and there are many pockets of awareness that kind of come together in a chorus to compose our individual awareness. And ego state psychology works with people who have kind of embedded within their psyche various trauma are various pains which have gotten isolated. They're self-isolated within the psyche, and they need to be contacted, made conscious so that the psyche can become more coherent. But it is an appreciation that there is a differentiation within the apparent seamlessness of our personality. And the question I'm asking at the end of the book is, what dies in these advanced states of awareness? What is it that actually dies? Because you go through so many deaths, and only some of the deaths can be understood as death of the ego. But there are so many deaths that take place at deeper and deeper levels. I'm asking, what actually is dying in these advanced levels? After ego has already died, what is dying? And I give several suggestions. One of them has to do with the death of the collective ego, the death of our species mind, our species ego. But then there's something that I call the death of the shamanic persona. The idea here is that we cannot hold everything that happens to us inside our sessions. Even when we really work very hard to do so, there's a certain sense in which we can't hold fully everything that happens to us. And yet, when we come back to our psychedelic work in our next session, that knowledge is there. It's waiting for us. So that we know that our consciousness is integrating these extreme experiences at levels that are deeper than simply our egoic awareness. What I call the shamanic persona is simply giving a name, you could call it the shamanic self, to that aspect of our consciousness which holds our psychedelic experiences up to a particular point in time. And I call it shamanic because of this overlap with shamanic states of consciousness and psychedelic states. So that when we are working at a certain level of consciousness, say something on the subtle level of consciousness, and our work begins to open into a deeper level, say the causal level of consciousness, all of our identity, our egoic identity, but now our shamanic identity has to be surrendered and die for us to awaken within a new level of psychedelic consciousness. That's what I call the shamanic persona. What's actually dying is the death of the shamanic persona and the birth of a deeper shamanic persona, which is simply to say that I take some insights from ego state psychology for how these ego states have a relative autonomy and yet porosity to give us some understanding of how some of this might work when working with psychedelic states and the shamanic persona.
Is it a death or is it the same as a letting go? We can accept all and not get stuck in a certain place.
Yeah, and I think the better we are at that, the more skillful we are at that, the easier it is to welcome the large, to welcome the unknown, to welcome the great depth that sometimes rises within us. In psychedelic work, at least in the way that I pursued it, you're kind of systematically pushing the boundaries of awareness, systematically pushing the boundaries of experience. At least for me, it became a matter of coming to the edge of the known universe up to that point in time and reaching a point where my sanity was at risk. Psychologically, it seemed that my life was at risk, that I was going so far into the unknown that I did not know whether I would ever come back, and making a conscious choice to trust the universe and to let myself be drawn into dimensions of time, dimensions of reality that were beyond anything that I had ever even read about. And then making that act of faith, making that leap, and allowing yourself to be purified, what I call purification unto death, purified so deeply that the very structure of your life and everything you had known and believed collapses and you die. And then you awaken in a different reality as a different being with different capacities. That's the miracle of it.
Exactly, yes. I can certainly hear that from you. And it's almost like, okay, now we're getting somewhere when you reach that point, right? Beyond the imagination.
Yeah.
There's a friend, Dr. Hugh Len, who says, I wish you peace beyond all understanding. And that's a saying, I believe, from the Ho'oponopono tradition from Hawaii. And it's like, yeah, beyond imagination, that's where we want to start from and move from there.
Yeah. And this larger reality is always kind of tapping at our door. It's always available to us. It's always kind of extending an implicit invitation. And over time, we can get better at letting it in, at recognizing what's happening. It doesn't have to come in these dramatic, cathartic, psychedelic exercises. It takes place in the very fabric of everyday life if we let it.
Right, right. What do you think the main thing you were able to get from moving from private self into species mind and beyond. How do you see that effect in the way you are in your everyday life?
Well, that's a big question, because there were so many levels and so many layers that got peeled back. I started this work as a highly educated, deeply convinced agnostic with a very strong atheistic bent. And I have come out of it with a passionate love for existence and a profound love relationship with the creative intelligence of existence. I see myself, I feel myself to be a servant of the Great Mother, which to me is the intelligence that is behind existence, the intelligence that gave birth to the Big Bang, and that it receives and nurtures existence at every moment of life. I image it as the Great Mother. I feel myself to be in her service. You can't hold the states of consciousness that I enter temporarily. I emphasize this in the book. This is a path of temporary immersion. It would be good if we could hold them permanently, but that's not the nature of psychedelics. It's not the nature of this practice. It's a path of temporary immersion. So in the end, I hold an unusual set of memories. But as always, our memories infuse our life, and they open us from within side, and they guide us. And my memories of these 73 days spent inside the deeper patterns of existence, they infuse my life. They don't allow me to live there every day, but they provide a context within which I try to live kinder, gentler, clearer every day, to take more responsibility for my actions, for others, and for the planet as a whole. And I do spiritual practice. I mean, I was always doing contemplative spiritual practice during all of my work. I think it's really important if you're going to enter into temporary deep states of consciousness that you ground those experiences in a daily spiritual practice. And I continue to do spiritual practice, not to try to push the boundaries of where I might go, but really just to welcome the universe more deeply into my present incarnation, into my present self.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it, really, isn't it, mm-hmm. in the end? Because there is no, after 25 years, I got there. Well, mm-hmm. there really isn't a period. There isn't a stopping point.
Yeah, that's the one thing that shifted for me on this journey. I always thought that I would get to an end point, that there would be some culmination. And some people have talked about oneness with God or dissolving into the primal void as being the end point. But what I found was that there are many degrees of oneness and many degrees of dissolving into the divine fabric, and even degrees of the emptiness of the fertile void. And at one point in my sessions, 15 years or more into my work, I was in a very, very deep, ecstatic state of consciousness. I was in what I call the diamond luminosity, far, far beyond samsaric existence, beyond physical reality, beyond the bardo, in the bliss of crystalline consciousness, hyper, hyper clear. It's like being inside the light of God's being. And from this state, which was as deep as I was ever to get in my entire journey, suddenly my field of vision shifted 90 degrees, a window opened up, and I saw reality far, far in the distance, and a beam of light hit me from that reality and catapulted me beyond where I was. And that's when I realized that it's an endless progression, It's an infinite. The universe, the dimensions of the divine or the dimensions of the universe are infinite. I realized I would never, even using this very powerful method, I would never reach a point where there would not be something deeper even still that I could go into. And that's why I would be gentler with myself if I were starting over again, because I learned that the goal is not to reach an end state or an end condition, whether you think of it as enlightenment or oneness with God, but the goal is to let as much of spiritual reality as possible into your incarnate existence and to live that state where you are both a physical being and a spiritual being. You live in this hybrid condition and you let the reality of spirit inform your choices in the physical world.
Right. And there's definitely a muscle for that, right, that needs to be developed. It's I know in Chinese medicine, for instance, when talking about the heart, you have to allow for and acclimate to joy as much as sadness. And if you're not prepared because you're feeling a constraint, it can do damage to your heart as well as sadness can, which is weird, but I really get that. I totally get that. So interesting.
Yeah, and we are, you know, to open what I call the one heart, just to open to the heart of existence, to open to the depth of compassion that holds all sentient beings, human and non-human, in your awareness and in your compassion, in your blessings. That takes practice, but it can be cultivated. All the spiritual traditions are about cultivating that, and we have many practices and many exercises, physical and psychological and spiritual, to cultivate that openness, one heart, one mind.
And you do write about how knowing spiritually and knowing spirituality brings joy to the weave of existence, and I thought that was beautifully said.
It does. Yeah, what I was really kind of surprised at along the way was not only was I taking joy from my experience of these deeper dimensions of consciousness, but the universe was taking joy in my knowing these things, of it teaching me these things, of having one of its children be able to consciously become aware of work that it had been doing for billions of years, largely without our conscious awareness. It takes joy.
Yeah.
That was surprising to me.
Right. I think God's had enough of being blamed.
Yeah. We blame because we don't understand what's happening. We don't understand how life works.
Right.
We have very incomplete knowledge. We don't understand reincarnation. We don't understand what reincarnation is building. I don't think any of the traditional religions up to this point in time have fully understood what is happening behind the scenes, because classically all the religions of the Axial Age are what I would call up-and-out cosmologies. They all see that the purpose of life is to achieve some state of awareness, some enlightenment, or some satori, or salvation, and then we can leave space-time. Then we go to parinirvana, or we go to the Buddha, pure paradise, or to the garden, or to heaven. And this, I think this is fundamentally, I understand it. I understand where this belief system came from. But I think it's an incomplete understanding of reincarnation. My understanding that comes through the sessions over and over again has been given to me is reincarnation leads to more and more awareness, more and more awareness, more activation of the potentials that are ours by virtue of being a human being, activating the chakras, one might say, to these deeper levels of awareness. But sooner or later, you know, we die, we open into the awareness of the soul, we're born, we contract into the awareness of ego, we die, go back to soul, we're born, come back into individual egoic awareness. If we keep that up over and over again, lifetime after lifetime, thousands of lifetimes, sooner or later, the soul awakens inside time and space. We awaken as the spiritual being that we are. Our whole spiritual existence comes together. All those former lives fuse And in their fusion, an energy is released that elevates our consciousness to a higher level of functioning. And at that point, evolution takes a fundamental pivot, because now it's not egos evolving in this universe, on this planet, but it's self-aware souls evolving on this planet. Now, I think we're coming to a crisis in history where we can no longer survive evolving as individual egos. We are pushing ourselves into an extinction crisis. We must wake up or perish. And I think we will wake up. I call this the birth of the diamond soul in history. I think that we are entering a terribly difficult time. But this difficult time is a labor in which nature is giving birth to the soul in history. And that's the game that's afoot right now. That's what we're all involved in. That's what all of our individual and our collective efforts are directed to help humanity through this evolutionary pivot into a more conscious existence, into a more peaceful existence, into a more compassionate and spiritually informed existence.
Yes, and there are so many aspects you can pull from, just all these clues throughout what's going on in the world, the fact that there's such a huge population right now, and just everything is gathering force. And thank you for sharing that, because that's what it is. And one of my funny favorite quotes is, hocus pocus, it's all where you focus. And you can focus on, oh, there are people starving or whatever. And of course, we all have the compassion and share what we can, etc. But that light is coming through the window, as you mentioned earlier, right?
Yeah, it is as if the divine is turning up the heat and we're coming to a boil. And the shatters, you know, the membranes are getting thinner. I'm sure you see this in, as well. Everybody's life is picking up the pace. It's speeding up. The challenges are becoming larger and they're coming at us faster. And globally, we're facing a huge challenge with global climate change and global climate disruption and the inequalities of our social systems and political systems, the vast disparities of wealth, where 26 people own half of the world's natural resources. That's insane, let alone criminal. It's just insane. This is putting enormous pressure on us. The environmental challenges we are coming into are putting us enormous pressure to grow up, to simply stop being an adolescent, and to become a fully fleshed adult. And I think that we are becoming conscious souls on the planet.
Yes. Now, considering, Chris, you certainly are the author of LSD and the Mind of the Universe, as well as these other books that you mentioned, I am bowing to you to conclude this interview. What would you like to conclude with?
Whoa, good question. Let me think for a minute. I guess I would say that I do understand that the story that I'm telling in this book is a radical story. I understand that it can sound like an arrogant story and filled with hubris, and I do understand that, and I apologize for it, but I have no other option but to tell the story as truthfully as I can, simply to explain what happened and to let people form their own conclusions. When I reflect upon this larger trajectory that I was taken into, first, it was such a privilege and such an honor to be able to do this work. And I don't feel personally attached to the work, because my life is, I live a few more years. What's the significance of trying to claim that? All of our work is larger than we personally are, so we just let it go and do the work as deeply as we can. If I could extract one thing and give it to people from this work, it would be to lose one's fear of death. Because if you're afraid of dying, you have the entire world upside down. death is graduation, death is homecoming, death is return. Being born is when the hard work begins. Mm-hmm. Being born is matriculation to another semester. Death is absolutely nothing to fear. This Benedictine monk, I think from the 13th century, said, those who die before they die do not die when they die. And so the survival of death is not because of something that happens to us when we die. We are already living in both worlds. It's a release of something that's already present inside our being. So to not be afraid of death is to befriend the deeper patterns of life. And to not be afraid of death is not simply something about not being afraid of what happens to you when your body dies. It's about not being afraid of these deeper orders of knowing and intelligence and love and compassion and beauty that well up inside of you, that come from places that we just can't imagine, and learning how to receive those and ride them. So all of us are on this journey. All of us are opening to deeper and deeper levels. We are all dealing with karma that's coming at us from our past and trying to clear that karma as best as we can. And if we do that, I think we open to deeper and deeper layers of the creative intelligence of the universe. And as we do that, our life begins to smooth out, begins to get calmer, and we begin to be aware of more opportunities where we can bring more light and do more good. It's an honor and a privilege just to be participating in that process with everyone else here in this generation.
Life is definitely a trip. Chris Bausch, author of LSD and the Mind of the Universe. To be in touch or anything Tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasts are on your favorite platforms. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.